If we could ask everyone to be seated, we're going to try and get started here in the next few moments. That was impressive. Everybody quite quickly. I'm not used to that. We're really delighted to be gathered here on the campus of Utah Valley University today, and welcome a lot of guests and friends of higher education. And we're especially pleased to be here to hear President Jimenez's first report on the state of the university. She addressed the student body just yesterday, I believe, and was really well received, and we're delighted to have you with us, and appreciate all of your hard work right out of the gates. And so we're going to turn the time over to you, President, to talk about what's going on here at UVU.
Welcome to my fellow presidents, because I didn't get a chance to say hello to each of you today. It's been very busy. Thank you for being here, and it's been wonderful so far. I had the chance to do a kind of a dry run yesterday with the state of the university, and there was a nice little summary on the front page of the Daily Herald. Thank you as well. The regents are here. If anything goes wrong at UVU, you only have yourselves to blame. Because 4 months ago, thank you for your trust in me. Thank you for selecting me and giving me what I think is really an amazing opportunity of a lifetime to be here at Utah Valley University and to work with a dynamic, growing institution with great leadership and a wonderful, diverse student body. I started in September 17, so it's been 4 months, and yesterday that was my State of the Union there. I want to report on a few highlights. In October, this was our annual scholarship ball, and I'm very proud to say that evening we hosted over 800 people, sit-down dinner. I danced. People paid. They paid $248,000 and $855 for scholarships. So successful ball, and it was my first time as well to be in front of that big of a community. I had the chance to talk a little bit about myself, but even more important, I had the chance to announce this initiative. As you know, some of you are probably aware that we have 38% of our student body, or about 15,000 students, who are first generation. So the first in their family to come and pursue a college degree. And this initiative, I announced that evening that it's a $15 million raise over 5 years. And we've already raised $3 million. As of that evening, we had $3 million raised. I'm so grateful to those donors who were very generous. And this first generation initiative is not entirely new. We have something called I Am First that's been going on here for a while. And at the end of the academic year 2018, 1,250 of our graduates were first generation. And I know that we had our first reception for them, about 300 students and their families came. I want to talk about other highlights with our students. On the second day of this job as president of UVU, I started something called Talk with Jimenez. And this is something, it's a broadcast that I do. It's streamed on YouTube. There are people who, you know, they can either, they can ask questions at the end of it, and I engage with them, and this is a way to bring the community together. And I take this opportunity, I've done a few of these, to talk about some of the big things happening on campus, and I'll just share a few of these stories with you. These are the ROTC Rangers. They competed in something called the ROTC Ranger Challenge. It is not for the faint-hearted. It involves IQ, it involves physical strength, assembling and disassembling weapons. Our team here at UVU competed in Colorado, won first place, went to Texas, won first place. They're now going to West Point for the national and international version of this contest. We've had an opera here recently, and my husband and I went, and we walked out of there thinking that it was better than any production we saw during our years at Harvard. Our UVU dancers are amazing. I have a friend in Singapore whose daughter, they have no ties to Utah, now wants to come to UVU because of this team here. And last week, they won first place in the Varsity Dancers U.S. Dancers Association. Our Saudi student union was awarded out of 300 Saudi clubs in the country, second place by the Saudi embassy. And we recently had our Martin Luther King celebration with students being very active in putting up our pop-up museum, as well as participating in the symposium and panel discussion. And then this one is special. Ruth Watkins, you might want to look at this one. They're wearing your color. I'm going to have to change that. This is a social innovation challenge, and this team from Utah Valley University won first place in the United States, went on to compete at Oxford, and beat 470 other colleges and universities. What this entails is you take a social problem, you apply systems thinking to it, you write an academic paper, and then you present to a panel of judges from Ashoka Foundation, Skoll Foundation, Pricewaterhouse. They won fourth place in the global competition. So I like to say that these students are punching above their weight. And I'm going to brag a little bit about our faculty. We have our chef. Today, after the Regents meeting, you may stop by our bookstore and buy the spices that Chef Todd has put together. He's voted the best chef in 2018 by the American Culinary Federation, and we just ate his food at lunch. And you may have read the research covered by The New York Times on penguin paternity, where they always thought the penguins mated for life, but it turned out they were as human as all of us. And when they sequenced the genome of the kids, the fathers weren't who they were supposed to be. Benjamin Evgen, our professor, who got the Listus Artist in Residence in Finland and spent his time there building tools and toys for children whose parents or caregivers suffered from epilepsy. Dean David McIntyre of our College of Health and Public Services just got an award for his scholarship in emergency management. And our arts faculty had their show. I went to opening night, and 15 Bites magazine in Utah had an article about them and talked about how they were reframing this whole area of portraiture in the arts. And this one is extremely exciting. Last year in the field of psychology, there were 4,000 scholarly articles published. And the eighth most downloaded article was by professors Jessica Hill and Russell Warney. And it's about how college students are taught psychology. So they looked at all the psychology textbooks and discovered that students, three quarters of these textbooks taught false information about human intelligence. So I think those are amazing things going on with our faculty. And one surprise of this presidency is that I have become an athletics president. In the old days, I used to say, why does BYU have that big stadium? Why? We could have spent that money on Russian literature. And I didn't realize that I'd be such an athletics president, but I go to as many of these games as I can. And we've had some fun times in basketball, in volleyball. We had a winning streak of 22 games in our home court with men's basketball. Our women's basketball this season have won the first four games in conference. Our wrestling team, I have a 17-year-old son that I moved from Singapore to Utah. I thought that he will never speak to me again in his entire life, but he started wrestling 2 months ago, and he's speaking to me again. And I have to say that our team wrestling, pretty amazing team. Rodeo, I think women came in second, the men third. Cross country, our men came in first. But what's important about athletics to me really are two things. One is that when I go, and when students go, and when staff go, and professors go, and our families go, seeing in front of your face this struggle, and how you recover when you're way behind, and how different people step up in teamwork in order to win and become sort of the hero of the game. And I'm also very pleased to report that in the last 3 years, 95% of our eligible student athletes have graduated. And the GPAs, I think this morning we heard some of those GPAs, quite high, 3.5 and up, for the women athletes. And so this is something that I feel we should celebrate. And I'm also happy to say that our ticket sales are up 90%, right, in terms of our sports. So Capitol Reef, how many in this room have been to Capitol Reef Field Station? UVU is one of 9 universities that have this kind of facility, and we are just finishing a larger classroom building there. This is where students of photography, earth science, astronomy, literature, you could use this space, and I was very glad that I could be there for the 10th anniversary. Lakemount, we are opening in 2020 a new art museum. The late Melanie Laycock Bastian has been honored by her 4 sons this way. She always shared this home with the neighbors. And this new art museum is going to become a gathering place for the community. I hope not just Utah County, but also beyond Utah County. And this will be a place for courses, internships, permanent exhibitions, traveling exhibitions. And I think it will do something for the level of our inspiration in this part of Utah. Our Norda Performing Arts Center is up and running. I hope that I'll see all of you during our Week of Dreams, March 23. We will open with a concert by Jason Alexander, also known as George Costanza on Seinfeld. Little did I know that he was an opera singer. And we will also have the Utah Symphony and then my inauguration that week. I would like to thank all of you who supported the fruition of this building, $60 million, 7 performance spaces. It is inspiring. When you look at the view of Timpanogos from the lobby of this building, you cannot help but be inspired. And some of you may know that we recently changed our medical maternity leave policy. And I'm a mother of 3 kids. If you give birth now, you can have 6 weeks of paid maternity. So I think this is something that I've already received and really pithy letters about this policy change. And this is to say to our families, we value you, moms, we value you, dads, and we value what you contribute to UVU, and we are here to help you be healthy and happy and successful. There was a comment on social media last night, well, what about the men? Why are you giving the women a vacation? And I turned to my husband and I said, honey, when I gave birth to each of our children with no anesthesia, was that a 6-month vacation or was, you know, it's sleep deprivation. I just thought it was funny that they said that on social media. Of course, I think one of the most critical things for me is how we continue to strengthen and improve our leadership at this university. It begins with me and the way I work with my trustees and the regents. It begins with my cabinet. So my cabinet is expanded with the addition of our Chief Inclusion and Diversity Officer and our General Counsel. And we renamed something called the Presidential Executive Leadership Council and renamed that as the University Executive Council. That's a bigger body with all the deans and then the other executives. But what I wanted that body to do, and we had an amazing discussion of what they felt they'd done well, what they felt their role was, what their role should be. And what was amazing to come out of that discussion was really new ways of reframing the role in terms of strategy, vision, decision-making, and then executing decisions. At the beginning of my term, probably the second week, I said thank you to my national advisory board. And I told them that I would reconstitute this into an international advisory board because the world of education and works today has no borders, really. And so this is in process. I am grateful for my faculty senate, my UVU student association, PACE, which is our employee association, and I think the heads may be here today. I can't do, and my team can't do what we do without all of you being aligned with us. I am on the market for provost and vice president of academic affairs. Not that I want to poach anybody from any institution, but I think this will be a very exciting hire, and we have a new head of HR who is starting on February 1st. And that will be, again, another important addition because one of the priorities for me is performance management, clarifying what we each have to do, what we control, what we own, what we have resources for, and ensuring that everybody we answer to, and we are clear about that, and that involves systematic performance management. We have established our Digital Transformation Task Force. This is a big ambition for me and for the university. And the task force is made up of faculty, student, one outside consultant, and it is, I think, a really great representation of who is at UVU and what's important to us. And the mandate to this group is to come up by April with the principles that will guide digital transformation and also an early roadmap of the steps that we can take. For me, the importance of this is simplicity. You have to simplify. You have to enhance productivity at lower cost, and you have to improve security. So when we think about giving students continuous feedback or having mixed modalities of instruction or having asynchronous interaction with our students, this is the kind of tool that can help make all of these things happen better, faster, and more effectively. It's not magic, but it can be used very well. I've done a lot of engagement with outside audiences, and I want to thank my fellow presidents, because the women presidents, we've been kind of on this woman roadshow of sorts. And but this has been really good for me, because I've been meeting a lot of audiences, and I'm thrilled about this. The Chronicle of Higher Education has started a series called A Day in the Life, and they picked UVU as the first university to feature. This publication has 2 million visitors to its website every single month. And so that helps us tell the story of UVU more widely to an audience that's really critical. So now the core business, as you know, is the dual mission, the community college, the comprehensive university. And I've had a lot to learn as university president. And what I want to say about this is this represents what we are doing here at UVU, diversity and opportunity in a very, very real way. Because we are open enrollment, and I love that you can, you know, look at the statistics on the kinds of students we have. So diversity and opportunity are happening here. And this is what I call relevant education for the 21st century. Why do I say that? I say that because having come from technology and seeing how millennials and Generation Z are navigating their education, I feel that this is a great place for them. And not just for millennials and Gen Z, but really for anybody who wants to come here. Non-prejudicial, because it is open enrollment, runs this whole gamut of offerings from a certificate program to the master's degree, continuous learning as well. And the focus is really, come as you are, UVU has a place for you. There is advisory. There are all sorts of structures and processes in place to help you get closer to where you want to be. I've come to appreciate this better when my own daughter, who was a top graduate of Singapore American School, a very good international school, voted by her faculty as the top of her class, goes to Columbia University and drops out after one semester. It was a big blow for me. And then she tells me, Mom, this is not how I want to do education. It took me 2 years to wrap my head around it. She farms for 4 years, and she got certified as a yoga instructor. And then now I'm realizing that as I watch her learn, she's probably going to go back to college. And you know, if she's in a place where she could do different things as she evolves as an individual, then she will succeed. That is a great definition of student success. Growth in the UCHI system is a theme that has also impacted UVU, and I will not say much about this, but move to this, which is our own growth. And you know these numbers already. Our ask for a new business building is in part a function of that, where you know where one in every four business graduates in the state is coming from UVU. And we had 87 business minors in 2013. We have 577 today. The average square footage for business schools in the state is 88 square feet per student. Ours is 14.4. And so when we say growth, it's facing us in a very real way every single day. And what is great too about this growth is that we are seeing the largest cohorts growing to be the juniors and seniors. So this is an indicator to me of persistence, or having done what you wanted to do when you left, you got married, you went on a mission or whatever, you come back. And this is something that we could build on, because the juniors and seniors are here. And I know every student I meet at UVU, I ask them, what year are you? And if they say freshman, sophomore, I look them in the eye and I say, you're going to finish. And if they're a junior, I tell them, oh, you're nearly there. And if you're a senior, I kind of jump up and down and say, yay. Retention is also improving. And I think the relevant line is probably from here to here. And I think we need to continue that trajectory and persist with the interventions that we have already put in place and new ones that we are just starting. By the way, you have a handout in front of you on completion and some of our responses to, I think, the mandates that had been given before my time on completion. I won't say much more. You can read the handout, but I want to emphasize that our current retention rate at 66%, this is the first time full-time bachelor seeking is the highest it's ever been. And I like that it's a bullish little indicator for what the future holds. We have also graduated 86% more students today than 10 years ago, but our student body didn't grow 86%. And 2016-17 and 17-18, that's a very nice jump of 21% more students graduating. This is a little bit busy, please bear with me. The important line is the green line. So if you look at an eight-year, look at a cohort and 8 years out, where are they? This 2012 cohort is doing very well. They're already at 26%. And we did say, I know I have a commitment. We have a commitment to the commissioner and the Board of Regents of 45% graduation rate by 2025. And I have already discussed that number here on campus. That is where our ambitions are. I talked to Ryan Smith, the CEO of Qualtrics, and he said at one point in time when he was worrying about so many things, somebody asked him, what is your number, Ryan? What is your number? You're trying to get colleges and universities as customers. And Ryan said, my number is 250 colleges and universities. And he said, whatever was happening, that's all he thought about, that's all he talked about. And so here at UVU is going to be 45%. We're going to dream about that, 45%. Graduates of color, this is a great indicator because, you know, at the end of the day, we said we're about inclusion, and this is really a great indicator for inclusion. UShi increased 198% overall in its graduates of color from 07-08. UVU, 366% for bachelor's and 362% for all degrees. And so when we say that we are creating opportunities systematically for as many people as possible, this is what we mean. We have a committee on re-envisioning the undergraduate experience. This slide is about some of the new interventions that I'm very excited about. We've just announced the first year center. So we have reconfigured advising, and this is a collaboration between academic affairs and student affairs. And this is to help to have a one place where freshmen could go so that you plug that leakage from freshman year to sophomore year. Our committee on re-envisioning the undergraduate education is looking at pathways, which requires changes in the curriculum and really looking at the pathway from community college, the bachelor's degree, and so on. And so this requires a lot of conversation, a lot of change. Meeting the first year math and English requirements, we are working on that. And scheduling in order to get rid of overlapping courses, sequence the courses right so that students can graduate and it is easier for them to move from this to this to this until they complete. The committee here is also looking at high impact practices and the possibility of a first year seminar. So I'm awaiting the recommendations, I hope within this academic year. We're very proud that the value of education at UVU is proven by the fact that when you look at all recipients of financial aid and what is the ratio of their salary when they leave to the total cost of their education, in the state of Utah, UVU has the highest at 5.3. And we really graduate young kids here. They get employment right away. And our ambitions don't end there. I was very surprised to find that we have 944 students who will study at the top 100 universities in the nation for graduate school. And then I asked my team, how many in the top 20 institutions? And we don't count Oxford. Is Nate here? Where is Nate, our presidential intern who just got into Cambridge? He's over there. Stand up and be counted. Congratulations. Last few slides. I said earlier that leadership is extremely important, and what I've been doing during my listening tour is to, as I celebrate the past, I talk about what we've done, what we can say wow about, and then I talk about the words that I believe should guide the future of Utah Valley University. I believe in values because they inform what we think every day, what we say every day, and how we act every day. And I have had small, medium, and large discussions on the words I have here on the slide. We begin with exceptional care because I say to my people at UVU that you must begin with care, and I use the phrase from the movie Avatar, I see you. I see you. Kyle Reyes, where are you? I see you, Kyle. I see the person in front of me, whether they're the student or the faculty or the person who's mowing the lawn when I lived in the presidential home. Because if we don't see one another, we're not going to be caring enough. But if we do see one another, we can begin in a good place. We can have honest conversations. We will move forward together. Care, however, is not enough. Then we have to have exceptional accountability. And to be very candid, I had some serious pushback on accountability. Some people feel that this word has been used to bash higher education. And some people feel that this word is used to scare people. And some people feel that I'm warning them that they're going to lose their jobs. And so I, listening to all of that and then returning to the people who didn't like this word and coming to a place where finally we and they could support exceptional accountability as a value for UVU. Finally, exceptional results. So if we care, if we believe in exceptional care and exceptional accountability, we will achieve exceptional results. And then from that, I have to talk about mental health because you asked me about this. So since I talked about care, I'll talk about mental health for a little bit. You have on your, in front of you, a handout as well on mental health and what we've been doing here. But my thoughts on this, our president, is yes, the ratios matter of counselors to students, and ours is about 1 to 3,000 if we leave out concurrent enrollment. And that's not great. But the story is not just about ratios. We are doing our best to improve there. It's really about the culture of exceptional care that I talk about. When I meet students who tell me they had a very difficult time their first year at UVU because it was so big and they didn't know what the word dean meant, and I asked them, why are you still here? They said, somebody reached out to me and it tends to be another student. So care, if we all care, and our professors are extremely important, they're the ones who notice if something is off. A holistic approach where the academic counselor is involved, medical doctor, psychiatric counseling, so we're doing all of that. And mixed modalities where I know there are such long waits for one-on-one counseling where we have group therapy without a wait period. This is on your handout, so I will not talk about this. Moving from the values that will guide UVU foundationally, what are the action commitments? Again, I've discussed this with everyone. Include, engage, and achieve. Under President Holland, the three key words were inclusive, engaged, and serious. And each of those words, all throughout the Holland era, had metrics under them. We will follow that same practice of having metrics. We include, we are open enrollment. We engage, and I keep the Holland definition of engage, which is engaged learning, engaged research. But I also mean by that, engage, come every day to UVU with your best energy and your best self. If you're a student, own your learning. If you're a faculty, own the teaching and scheduling. If you are the president, own the presidency and be here not as a passive person, but be here because you believe in the mission of this institution and you know that everything we do here matters for real people. Of course, achieve 45%, our magic number, 45%, but there are other things you want to achieve besides that. So we will define this. It's an iterative process where we know what the metrics are that will be measured. This is my last slide. I grew up in the Philippines, and we have a tradition called Bayanihan, heroism. And this is very literal. When my grandmother, my father's older sister, needed to move her hut from the village where I was born to another village, they literally did this to her hut, but they split it in half and left the other half for my mother and my father and my five siblings at that point in time. This is what I see UVU to be, that this is a place that welcomes people but helps us systematically create opportunity and create success. The question that I put in this slide is from a podcast by Malcolm Gladwell where he talks about human capitalization and poses this question, what percentage of those who are capable of achieving something actually achieve it? It's not about raw or hardcore talent. Because talent, by the eighth grade, if you're a member of a gang, you can kiss the talent goodbye. We believe in first chances, second chances, third chances, and fourth chances in this institution. And as the community knows, I have said to them, this is not about me. This is about us doing this work, believing in it, having the discipline every single day to deliver, and I hope having fun as we do it. Thank you very much, and I will be happy to answer questions. My team is also here, and they can answer questions as well.
Any questions anybody has? What's been the most notable positive surprise you've dealt with since you arrived, and the most unexpected challenge?
The most positive surprise is how nice the neighbors are. Some of you may have heard the story that, you know, my second week in the presidential home, I opened the door to go out, and there's a plate of brownies, and I stepped back, and I said, who's trying to poison me? And that's only because I lived in New York and Hong Kong and, you know, other places. And so the niceness of these neighbors, the people who left me those brownies, the husband has become the pediatrician of my children. The wife has given me all the doctors that I need. They've offered their truck for when I'm ready to move my giveaway stuff to DI. That's just something new, really new for me, and very positively surprising. So I love it, and I know that I can trust my neighbors. Was there another half to your question?
And what's the flip side of that coin? Any unexpected
any really horrible part to this job? The really, really horrible part of this job is driving. I have never driven in my life. And so I had one accident on Christmas Eve. And also, I will confess, I took my practical test 2 days ago and failed. I was so mortified and angry, I had to take a walk. Fortunately, UVU has long corridors, and you don't have to step outside. So you could just walk here, walk the hallways. It's very humbling for me, very, very humbling. My husband has suggested that we hire a driver. And I said to him, are you kidding me? I will be the laughing stock of the state of Utah. What helpless university president can't drive herself? So I've only lived in cities with public transportation. I do take the front runner to attend the Council of Presidents meetings. When I drive in the car, I do deep breathing, and I remind myself to do spot checks. I know it's laughable for you. Please do not mock my trials as university president.
Okay, any other questions? Well, we greatly appreciate
Thank you so much.
All the great work you're doing, President. It's a really exciting time here at UVU. Okay, we're going to move on. The next item on our agenda is the general consent calendar under tab M. You've had an opportunity to look through those materials, including the minutes. Is there any discussion about any of those items? If not, can we have a motion to approve those matters under tab M? We've got a motion from Regent Tyre. Is there a second? From Regent Prince. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Okay, we're going to move to tab N and talk for just a few minutes about the statewide college advisors program and get an update on that. This is, you recall, a priority that we adopted in our September board meeting. And we assembled this Regent Strategic Communications Committee chaired by Regent Jones and Regent Wright and several other members, and they've done a lot of work over the last few months, and including assembling some details of the initiative in preparation for the legislative session. And we're going to turn some time over to Regent Jones to give us a little bit of an update on the College Access Advisor Program.
Thank you, Chair Simmons. Appreciate that. I really loved what the president just said about, I wrote down this quote, what percentage of those who are capable of achieving something actually achieve it? And I have a sense that this particular initiative will actually improve that percentage. So I'm very excited about that. I also wanted to mention what a joy it is to work with the staff at USHE. I have to say, some of these ideas come from staff because they have their feelers out and really have their head to the grindstone and share some of those ideas with us. So I wanted to thank them for the work that they do in doing this. Well, the planets are aligning, I think, on this particular issue. I'm going to turn the time over in just a minute to the commissioner. He'll give some detail on this, but I think it is important to say that it seems like so many different entities are wrapping their arms around this particular initiative. So I think we have something very exciting going on, and I'll leave it to the commissioner to give the details on it.
Well, thank you, Regent Jones. It's my pleasure to give you a bit of an update. You remember you had approved this in September, and then in November you took some other steps, and so this is just an update. Let's see. There we go. All right. Part of this is just a little bit of a review, just to kind of refresh everybody's memory. So the College Access Advisors will help high school students to do these sorts of things, to register for and complete college entrance exams, to submit applications, to apply for scholarships and financial aid, and to connect to their college campus. As you'll remember, and this was part of what the action you took at the last meeting in November, we reprioritized $1 million of money that had been appropriated previously by the legislature to the commissioner's office to get us further down the road, even as we're asking the legislature to provide the rest of the support to take this statewide. So with this $1 million, we will go from the 12 schools that have started at the University of Utah's program that they started a number of years ago to a total of 33 high schools. And the high schools that we've selected for this, and we've had lots of communication with lots of K-12 schools, we've based this next step on those high schools that had the highest need in the state, based on FAFSA completions, free and reduced lunch, and so forth, as well as geography, whereas the 12 are in Salt Lake County, with the exception of one in Washington County. We've also tried to move along different regions of the state with this. So I'm happy to announce today the next schools that will be funded out of the $1 million that we're repurposing. And so you can see we have a group in Weber and Davis County, one in Utah County, one in Washington County to expand things there, and then this is the Salt Lake County group, which is already existing. We are also going to, the next step will be to place regional coordinators at these four institutions. Of course, there's already a group at University of Utah, but then to add Weber State, UVU, and Dixie. Now, for the other presidents, I was a little bit nervous about this slide. This is just the first step. Eventually, as this goes statewide, there would be somebody at each of the institutions, but this is just our next step. By summer of 2019, advisors will be hired, the access advisors, for the 2019-20 school year, and the regional coordinators will also be hired and embedded at partner institutions, and the institutions will have a role in the hiring of those regional coordinators. Just to remind you of the expected impact based on the results from the College Advising Corps that has been in existence for the last dozen years, they saw an increase in college enrollments, which is not too surprising, but what was more surprising was the increase in completion, and we also have now calculated a return on investment for the state of a 16% increase in return on investment and increased wages once the statewide program is in place and these students attend college and graduate from college. Now I have just a short video. We're going to share this also with the legislature. So if I can get this queued up, Melanie trusted me to do it. Oh.
Did I miss it?
Spencer will get it going. Yeah, because it's not playing. Thanks, Spencer. We'll share this video with the legislature.
I really want to go to college and improve my future. And these people at school, Ms. Hernandez and Ms. Avea, they really know a lot and they help me, you know, make a path for me to follow.
We know that there is a gap between students in high school and going to college. And many students in high school who want to go to college don't know how to navigate that.
You know, and anytime we navigate anything, it's really helpful to have a point person that we can talk to. So we need someone who can help these students because our economy absolutely depends on an educated society.
College Access Advisors makes a big impact. It helps more students go to college and it helps more of them graduate from college once they do attend.
One third of our students are not enrolling in some post-secondary education.
Well, my name is Yelena Dragicevic, and since I am a first-generation American, the entire college process is very overwhelming, and I did not know how to send in my ACT scores or what the next step was, and so I went to the Career Center and they told me about Ms. Hernandez, and she's helped me ever since.
Well, there's 3,200 students in this school and 9 counselors. If you average that out, that's somewhere around 20 minutes per student. And you can't do all of this in 20 minutes. There's no way.
Me being a first generation student, it's kind of hard to learn about scholarships, how to apply for FAFSA.
So I come from an immigrant family. I came to the United States when I was 12. So my mom didn't really speak English when she first came, and she hasn't gone through the college system in the United States.
Counselors are doing so much already. They're doing schedule changes and helping students in hard situations and doing that counseling aspect. Sometimes college gets forgotten.
The surest way to break the cycle of intergenerational poverty is access to college.
You know, they don't know what college can do for them, and so I think this program just kind of helps open their minds to it and helps them think about it and understand why going to college is important and why getting an education can help you in the future.
The College Access Advisory Program is proven. It should be available to every student throughout our state.
I am so overwhelmed with the amount of college applications and the requirements and the essays and the forms that you need to submit. And so having somebody that can say what you need to do and how is very helping. So having Ms. Hernandez sit by me while I'm typing up my essays, giving me advice, and then giving me advice of how to turn in my transcripts and the ACT scores, it's so helpful and it takes off that stress.
No one in my family has ever pursued their career. So that's really motivated me to pursue my career because it gives me more of a chance to know what I want to do in life.
PL has a scholarship for me, so I always go home and look over it and know that I apply and know that I have a chance to have the money to go to college. Because I don't really have a big supportive system, so I know that I could count on at least one person.
I know that I can make it into college and I can go where I want to go.
If I did not have somebody helping me throughout this process, I feel like I certainly wouldn't have applied to as many universities as I have, nor would I have known about as many scholarships that I do. So I feel like that would reduce the amount of financial aid that I'm currently getting, the amount of resources and opportunities that I'm pursuing, because I wouldn't know where to begin. I wouldn't know where to look, nor how to achieve those goals.
And this will inform and educate those students who are looking to go on and beyond their high school years, and to find those things that fit best for them, whether it be a technical college, whether it be a four-year institution, and then maybe going on for advanced degrees.
Our goal is to have a College Access Advisor available to every Utah high school student. as I mentioned, we've been working with a number of our K-12 partners, and we're excited to have Superintendent Todd McKee here today. And if, Superintendent, if you'd like to just come up and say a few words, you can come up front or just...
Where would you like me?
Why don't you come right up here, since President Tumines has stayed far away from me. Thanks.
I'm here on behalf of Superintendent Retail, and appreciate the opportunity to speak just briefly both to the need and to our gratitude for this program. You know, I've spent 20 years of my career in high schools, and every year we would have that conversation with incoming ninth graders about their plans and where they see themselves going after high school. And undoubtedly, nearly every student would say they're on their way to college. And then we would meet with them again at the end in 12th grade. And many of them, while they would make that transition, there was always this group, very capable, that just seemed to lose their way. They were unsure about the next step. They were unsure what direction they were going to go in their life. I learned very quickly that we take some things for granted, particularly those things that seem to be evident. In college application process is one of those. We've spent the last 10 to probably 15 years in public education talking a lot about college and career readiness. And while that entails a lot around the knowledge and skills and dispositions that we expect of students, we don't necessarily talk a lot about the practical aspect of it. In fact, I believe it's Dr. David Conley at the University of Oregon who probably has the best definition of college and career readiness. And he talks about the need to be very explicit with students about making that transition. So we see this as an opportunity to do that for our students in the Provo School District. We're looking forward to this. We believe it's going to really help our students, particularly those that don't necessarily have the social capital and the knowledge and the background of how to make that next step, how to make that transition into post high school. So we're grateful for this opportunity. We're very grateful to the board for your support and look forward to a great partnership.
Thank you so much. A couple others who wanted to be here but weren't able to be, so we just have some quotes from them. Superintendent Nye from the Ogden School District, you can read his. I'll just hit a couple of highlights that they're excited about it, having a person on the ground full-time helping students navigate college admissions and the financial aid process will be instrumental to getting more of our students connected to college opportunities and just how that will help their students, particularly those that are underserved, and how they will benefit from it. And then also Larry Bergeson from Washington School District, similarly, they're committed to helping students succeed in post-secondary opportunities after high school. Our administration is excited to see the benefits of this program in our schools and the opportunities it will provide for our students. So again, here's the timeline, and this is with confidence of getting the legislative funding that we're requesting, that by the end of 2019, we'll be in 33 high schools statewide, and then by 2020, 50%, and by 2021, 100% of Utah high schools. As Regent Jones mentioned, this is gaining quite a bit of support as we've been out sharing this idea. You can see the various chambers of commerce, the State Superintendents Association, secondary counselors, Women in the Economy Commission, the Governor's Commission on Educational Excellence, our partners of the State Board of Education, and United Way Promise Partnership. I'm sure now I've missed something. I was not going to read them all. But anyway, we're gaining support by the day for this initiative that you have launched. So again, that's a large priority. Be happy to respond to any questions that any may have, or if there's other comments. Yes?
I just have a question. Is there any concern, or what's the plan on finding these advisors? Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yes. Spencer's close by, so I'm going to take a whack at it, but Spencer's our point person. Come on up somewhere, and so you can fill in if I've left something out. But fortunately, we do have the experience of what has happened before. Right. But we are looking for a bachelor degree. You remember that? Recent graduates. But Spencer, do you want to? Can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, and as we've talked with the folks at University of Utah who've been running this program,
please pull the mic closer. Sorry, thanks. It's really hard.
As we've been talking with the folks, Nicole Batt and Sandy at the University of Utah who've been running this program, the recruiting abilities for these types of staff has really not been a huge challenge. There's a lot of students in the education programs who come out wanting to get into this field, and this is a great entry point for them. So we actually feel like it's a great pipeline and a great experience builder for those kinds of students. So we're confident that we'll find those folks.
And probably in the Wasatch Front in some places, it might be easy. I don't know. Yes. It'll be interesting to see what happens other places of the state if you're going to be able to find. Anyway.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, that's kind of also why we selected some to stretch us geographically, because it will be a new dynamic.
It'll give us some good experience to take it further.
Commissioner,
yes.
If I might
yes,
add,
please.
They do get paid for this, too.
Right. Yes, so yes. It's a first job out of college for 2 or 3 years. So, yes, please.
From today's meeting so far, I think I've always...
Please pull the mic close so we can hear it on
the screen. I think I've used it wrong. You said the stars aligned. I mean, the planets aligned. I always said the stars aligned. But in hearing everything today, I really feel that the planets are aligning with this. When we heard from Representative Owens about the college access scholarships, what came out of our working group with the acceptance letters, I think the acceptance letters with the college access advisors perfectly aligns with what we're trying to do here with acknowledging and recognizing the changing demographic of our state and what is going to be the inevitable. I think one thing, and I think I will give a shout out to the University of Utah, and I think it's really rolling out the red carpet for these students. I mean, we've got the scholarships there. We're going to have these acceptance letters that really give them value, and then we're going to have people there with them. Guiding them, and in watching the video, it really struck me right now that they have to meet with these advisors. They're going to meet with these advisors, and that's going to teach them when they're eventually in college to be proactive, because it is accountability on their part as well, and they're being held to that standard through these college advisors. I was meeting with one of the students during lunch, and this fits perfectly because she talked about, and I've always used this too, and when she said it, I felt like we were soul sisters here, about having this generational leap forward and having this access really, really early on. And I think it opens up the resources as well for what President Heftalen was talking about earlier, how they can use other resources that they have to really go through K-6 and really, or K-9, and really reach out to those students and get them thinking about college. And really, it's like the perfect link of a chain where everyone's linked, and hopefully we're not going to lose students, because it's vital for them to understand that this red carpet is being rolled out to them, because we need them. We need them in higher education. So,
thank you very much, Regent Ortega. Other, yes?
I just would add a comment. I'm just thrilled at the opportunity we have to tap into the unused federal money that Utah leaves on the table every single year. It's a huge $35 million-ish that we're leaving. So what an opportunity for us to really tap in and utilize that money to educate Utahns.
That's my report, unless there's anything else, Regent Jones or Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we all share that excitement about how all of these things fit together, these pieces. It's going to be exciting if we can get the support we need. I'm going to turn the time back over to the Commissioner to go over the items under the next four tabs. So
yes, thank you. I do have several items to bring to the Committee of the Whole. Next on... Tab O, you'll recall that the board, as is the practice, approved the statewide region budget priorities for this legislative session beginning on Monday. That was approved in September. Since that time, I had one president approach me about wanting to repurpose, kind of reallocate within the amount that the board approved for that institution. I then shared that with all of the presidents to say, if anybody else, not to raise the amount that was approved, but if there were other priorities that now have superseded from what they were thinking in the summer. And so what is being recommended here are two amendments. one for Weber State University, and of course they have a brand new president with President Mortensen, so not too surprising that he's realigning things just a little bit, and then a small realignment for Snow College. And if there's questions, they could certainly answer that. You have the materials lined out here, but my recommendation is to go ahead and make these amendments. You can see in the tab, if you look at the, and I'm still using paper, you're all online, but it's easier for me in presenting. Anyway, you see the summary sheet. So you have kind of the before and presumably after today. And you see that things change a little bit, but the bottom line remains exactly the same. It's just a little bit of reshifting within those two institutions of their portion of the request. But are there questions, Mr. Chair? Or?
Any questions about that? Do we have a motion to approve that change? Motion from Regent Clyde, second from Regent Lund, I think. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
All right. Next, then, is tab P. This is legislative priorities. We had a great discussion on this morning, and I really thought it was one of the best we've had. But just to kind of remind you, this is what we talked about this morning, but the major policy areas. And again, our Strategic Communications Committee has been key in kind of focusing on what those are. So those four policy areas, of course, we'll be working to make sure that the legislation works for each of the institutions on these areas. And then just a reminder of the policy that the board adopted in July on legislative communications, on who represents the institutions of the legislature when it comes to making legislative request. I shared this again with the presidents at our last meeting. And then the fact that, you know, we have this additional help this year, which I'm very excited about, the Strategic Communications Committee. They have been, as you've already heard today, working on an advocacy strategy for the legislative priorities. As I think this was mentioned this morning also, that we're going to do a weekly call. Spencer Jenkins will, and I will when I'm able to join, just to keep them in the loop as we go along, and they'll be advising the executive committee as needed if there's some potential formal actions in between meetings. So the action item on tab P, this just summarizes the bullets of what you have in the commissioner's recommendation to reaffirm the budget and legislative priorities. This would include, as you just amended, to direct that the regents, commissioner, presidents, and staff work in a united front with the legislature, authorizing the commissioner to act on behalf of the Board of Regents in consultation with the Strategic Communications Committee and also board leadership on issues as they emerge during the session, and then to provide weekly updates, as we have done traditionally every Monday morning to board members. And Spencer was telling me that's one of our most popular places on our website, that is used a lot by the institutions apparently throughout the session to provide an update on things going on in the legislative session. So that is my recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Okay, are there any comments or questions about this item? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve these recommendations?
I make that motion.
A motion from Regent Jones. Second from Regent Dada. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That passes.
All right. Our next one doesn't have a slide. So this is in tab Q. I want to make sure I'm on the right one. This is a follow-up from the November meeting as well on system metrics. And you'll recall that the reason for having these metrics and goals is to assist you as the Board of Regents in your statutory responsibilities to measure the progress of the system as a whole and individual institutions in advancing your strategic objectives for the system of higher education. Just as a little bit of a refresher, at the November meeting, the Board adopted 7 system metrics and directed me as Commissioner to work with the Presidents to delineate the expected institutional contributions or goals for those metrics as appropriate. As in working with the presidents between November and just a week or two ago, it became clear that institutional goals were appropriate for 5 of the 7 and could be identified today for 4 of the 7, that 2 of them makes more sense to have it as a system metric, that is general attainment and access and participation, just in a broad sense for the state as a whole. So we're all on the third of those. We are working through some data consistency issues on the workforce metric. As we got heavily into the data and with lots of work from the institutions, I should mention as well, everyone's been very busy on this to bring this back to you today. So we'll present some institutional goals on that one in March after we are sure we've got the data issues all solved. I'm recommending refining the metric and the system goal for the affordability metric to better align with mission-specific roles of the institution. If you look at that, you see I'm now recommending that we delineate those by institutional type, so the research universities, the regional universities, and the community colleges. The institutional goals are fairly self-explanatory and generally align with the board's system goal, with the exception of the cost per award, and there are good reasons for that. The system goal is that our costs will lag the higher education price index, which is basically the consumer price index for higher education, by 5%, so that we would set our target at 95% of that. With the University of Utah, with the high-cost graduate programs and other things that they have, 100% of HEPI, just staying in line with that, is more appropriate. For Dixie State, which is still emerging as a regional university, it makes more sense that they be triple of HEPI, and UVU is further along that, but has been, of course, has made the transition to a university a number of years ago, and so they would also be at 100%. The other institutions would have the institutional goal of 95%. If there's questions on that, I'm sure those presidents could respond, but I think that's very reasonable. Also recommending, this is really based on the discussion in November, board members raised a number of areas that you had suggested we consider adding as system metrics. And so these are access by gender and ethnicity, timely completion using the national standard measure, which is affectionately known as IPEDS, the first year to second year retention rates, and workforce. We were looking at the 5-star jobs, but it was recommended that we add also to that elementary and secondary education and mental health professions. And so if you approve these recommendations, then we will come back to you in March with institutional goals that go along with those new system goals. Any questions or concerns on that? And of course, there's a lot more detail. I'm just trying to give you a summary of the materials that you have and you've already had an opportunity to review. All right, then let me go to the last part of this. Is institutions have suggested, and I am recommending to you, some institution-specific metrics, 4 institution-specific. 1 on Salt Lake Community College, their transfer conversion rate. As a pilot, we would see how that works, and then if that works well, we would likely extend that to Snow College as well. For the University of Utah and Utah State University, a research metric. For the University of Utah, hospital and clinics quality metric. For Utah State University, an extension services metric. Are there questions on those specific institution-specific metrics to be added? Those presidents could address them if there are. All right, I don't see any. And then, again, if you adopt those metrics, then they would be included in the, they would be finalized for the board approval in March. As part of the package of metrics. So you can tell there's a lot of work that has been done. I want to thank the presidents and their staff members and my staff who've been very involved in this, Liz Hitch and Kimberly Henry and Joe Curtin. I better quit naming names, but everybody on our staff has been very involved and at the institutions. This has been a very heavy lift, but a very important one for the future success of the system, and I think to provide you some additional tools as the Board of Regents. So that's my recommendation, Mr. Chair.
All right. Questions for the Commissioner? Comments? Including from any of the presidents. Any further comment from any of you?
They're all worn out for the last 2 months on this.
Well, my own view is that, you know, these we shouldn't allow these to become too static. I mean, we'll want to continue to look at them and think about the relevant metrics that we ought to be using to think about our success and failures. And so this won't be the last conversation we have not only about the results, but about the metrics themselves, I suspect.
Right.
So with that, do we have a motion to approve the recommendations on the table? Okay, we have a motion. Vice Chair Barnes, second. Regent Tyrer, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay.
Mr. Chair, my final item is under tab R on 2018 annual report. And a draft of that is hot off the press and on your table. Looks like that. I know a number of things have been handed out. This provides a quick summary of the major issues and accomplishments of the Board of Regents over the past calendar year. And again, this is something that we would plan to update on a regular basis. But, and I know you haven't really had an opportunity to read it because, like I said, it is literally hot off the press. I think it was printed yesterday. But we would invite you to take a look at that, and in between now and the next meeting, if you had any comments or suggestions, or if there's any right now that stand out, to please pass that along to us, and then I can go through the commissioner's recommendation.
Okay. It's really great to have the system metrics laid out in a very crisp way toward the back of this, and that's great.
I think this will be a very good tool for us going forward. All right. If I may just go through my recommendation. It's there in tab R. There are four parts of it. First is to adopt the annual report with any adjustments that you deem necessary. Second, and this was discussed in the Academic and Student Affairs Committee, and Regent Ortega brought this up as well. We want to, at least for now, suspend the activities of staff related to the Utah College acceptance letter until we have the statewide college advisor fully implemented, so that these can be totally complementary and not be confusing messages with our high schools or students. Third, and I think this is really significant, we have not done this as an office in recent years in my memory, but to direct me to bring to you a work plan for the Commissioner's Office for fiscal year 2020 that identifies deliverables, including the resources necessary, milestones, and timeline for the fiscal year in support of the priority areas. And we plan to bring this work plan to you in May, the May meeting. And then finally, to begin development of an updated strategic plan based on the research efforts of the Gardner Policy Institute. This is something that Chair Simmons initiated, which I think is going to be very welcome, to take another look at educational attainment, given our changing demographics, and to give us a solid basis where we could look at updating our strategic plan based on that. And Chair, you may want to say more about that.
Well, yeah, I just what I'd want to say is that, you know, we've had this 66% by 2020 objective in place for some time, and we're now really, it's for all intents and purposes, 2020 is upon us in the next little bit here. And so this would be, and in my discussions with the commissioner, I do think that one of the things that could have been probably better executed with the original, with the 2020 goal, was having really good demographic, kind of a baseline from a really credible source in terms of what the trajectory looks like given current attainment rates by regionally, by ethnic group, et cetera. And so we've engaged a lot of you. We've seen some of Pam Perlick's work at the Kem Gardner Institute. We have Pam and her, Dr. Perlick and her staff putting together a new, really a profile of what we would expect educational attainment and higher educational attainment to look like over the next several years. And we expect to have that completed by March. And that would be something we would use as a basis for starting to develop a new plan over the next several years. So that's what that is.
Thank you. That's my recommendation.
Okay. Any questions, comments, including we have this deferring getting the acceptance letters that I think we're all enthused about, but this would put a little bit of a pause in that so that we have a kind of an integrated program. Any thoughts about that or anything else in this annual report? Getting late in the day. Okay. If not, could we have a motion to accept the annual report?
The four recommendations.
And the recommendations, I'm sorry, the recommendations we have in this tab. Regent Anderson, a motion, a second.
Second.
We have a second from Vice Chair Barnes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thank you very much. We will now turn to reports from our committees, and we'll start with Regent Tyer, Chair of the Academic and Student Affairs Committee.
Thank you, Chair Harris. We had some lively discussion in our committee today that I'm sure is going to continue because we didn't come to conclusions from that lively discussion. But let me just share with you the action items, and I have a couple motions there. I'd like to make a motion that we approve the revision of policy R-165 concurrent enrollment. And along with that motion, I would add, nothing to add to that one, sorry. So we'll just, for those of you who haven't read that, that was just an update for some legislative changes that were supposed to happen with a House bill from last year, and it was to make sure that the adjunct instructors all had the same requirements, and then they made a few other changes in that. So I'll make a motion to approve that.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second? And a second from Regent Ortega. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay, our second action item is the mental health recommendations that we've talked about for quite some time. And we had a good discussion in our meeting about that. But on this motion, I'd like to make a motion that we accept the changes to the Regent mental health recommendations, along with the addition that we bring back the mental health committee. Possibly consider adding additional members and moving forward with discussion on mental health issues with our higher ed institutions.
Okay. We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
All right. Second from Regent Jensen. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Let me just quickly share the other three. We had our annual Engineering and Commuter Technology Initiative annual report, which we have every year. John Sutherland presented that, who has been the chair of that since 2001. We actually had pretty good discussion on that this time. It's pretty impressive that higher ed does 75% of the career and technical education that's done in our state. I think sometimes we don't realize that. And a big shout out to Salt Lake Community College, who actually does provides more of our technical education in our state than all of the technical colleges combined.
So that's pretty impressive what happens at Sully Community College. And there's some others that provide a lot, too. So we appreciated that annual report, but I always like to throw in that we do a lot of concurrent technical education in our state. We need to get more credit for that. And then the second one, we had an update from Commissioner Buehler on the college acceptance letter, which has kind of been put on hold right now. The explanation of the purpose of that as we consider our college access advisors and figuring out how all that fits in, not trying to get the cart before the horse. So we had that discussion. And then we had the career and technical education is the one from John. No, is the career and technical education is, I kind of flipped that into the other one. John Sutherland's was the engineering one. The one that we had the discussion about, career technical education, was this one. So we had two reports. Sorry about that. I already told you about that. Our last item, which we had a long discussion about, was the continuation of the transfer and articulation discussion, which we will continue. And there was a suggestion that we continue with that at our next Academic and Student Affairs Committee. So we'll be meeting with the committee, with the members of this committee, to find out when we can meet and have a longer discussion, because 25 minutes wasn't long enough in our thing. So anyway, that's the report. Sorry about messing up one and three and combining them.
That's all right. All right. Thank you very, very much for that report. We'll turn to Regent Anderson, who's Vice Chair of the Finance and Facilities Committee, to report on that committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Finance and Facilities Committee met today and covered items found in tab E through L. We began with a discussion highlighting the revenues and expenditures over the last 4 years for the system and by each institution led by Associate Commissioner Henry. I should just point out that the presentation is now on Diligent Boards, so all of you can access, and I would encourage you to do so. It was very, very informative. But as part of the board's fiduciary responsibility, the Finance and Facilities Committee has asked the commissioner's office staff to develop a series of discussions that helps us gain a better understanding of the cost structures within the Utah system of higher education. And the committee will continue to examine this issue over the next several meetings and to look for ways to that we can identify ways in which the system can assist in developing cost-effective solutions to managing the cost of higher education within the state. So I want to especially thank Dr. Henry for the material that she's put together, and it was very, very informative. After this discussion, we took up two items that require actions. The first one is found in tab F, and then the second one in tab G that we will need to review and then have final action today. The first one, tab F, Utah Valley University presented an amendment to their campus master plan. And UVU requests approval of their updated master plan that was last approved on November 18, 2016, with the inclusion of the gift of the Latemont Manor. And we saw that in the picture that will be used for the arts program. So with that, I make a motion to approve the Utah Valley University Master Plan as presented in the Finance and Facilities Committee.
Thank you very much. We have a motion. Are there any questions about the motion?
Second
by Regent Clyde. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Okay, the second action item is found on tab G. The University of Utah proposes a golf training facility using non-state funds for this. The U requests authorization to proceed with a non-state funded project to construct a new 6,000 square foot golf training facility for the men's golf athletic program south of campus on Guardsman Way using $2,497,000 dollars of donated money and institutional funds. We had a healthy discussion about that, and there was a concern within the committee that in the future that you may want to approve a women's golf program, and would it be prudent to look at that now to see if the design would accommodate that if it was approved in the future. So with that in mind, I'd like to make a motion that that we approve the University of Utah's golf training facility project with the expectation that the women's golf program, if approved, consider future accommodations necessary to accommodate that program and then report back to us.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Is there any discussion?
May I just make a comment
yes.
on that?
Thank you. I mean, that comment was made because the University of Utah is the only Pac-12 school that does not have a women's golf program. They have a great one here at UVU and some of our other institutions, but that was the reason for that.
So we simply asked the University of Utah to come back and just let us know about their thinking about that.
So. Do other institutions in our state have women's golf things? You do, Weber does?
There are some.
Dixie. UVU does or does?
Well,
almost do.
If I might add to that, we have found that golf is extremely important in the business world for advancing women. And also that there are more than 200 women's golf scholarships that go unused in the nation every year. So there's some opportunities there for our young women to get a great education.
If you golf like I do, you found it was of no use whatsoever. Okay, so we have a motion. Is there a second? A second by Regent Dada. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we have several just information items. The Finance Committee reviewed five information items found in tabs H through L. And unless there are specific questions from Regent members, I will quickly highlight each item and would encourage you to read through the cover memos and attachments if you haven't already done so. If you have questions, we have plenty of UC staff here to help us answer those questions. So, tab H, the University of Utah has a trustee property disposal item. As required by Regent policy, the U notifies the Regents if its Board of Trustees approves the disposal of an item, and in this case, it's a condominium gifted to the university for an appraised value of $185,000 and approved by the trustees at their November 18th meeting. Under tab I, we have a USHI, the space utilization report for 2017 and 18. The committee received the first annual USHI space utilization report required by the Regent policy adopted in March 2018 that includes institutional classroom and laboratory utilization information, as well as institutional reporting of goals and accomplishments in meeting Regent adopted utilization standards. Assistant Commissioner Ammon provided a brief presentation highlighting the content of the report for members of the committee. The third item is found on tab J, a USHI report of auxiliary enterprise operations. The Commissioner's Office provided an annual analysis and report to the Board on the financial health of the institution's auxiliary enterprises, including housing, campus stores, food service, and student centers at each USHI institution. Overall, UC Institution Auxiliary Services are operating in a positive financial position and expected to continue in a positive financial situation through FY 2019. Okay, on tab K, we have the UC annual report on institutional and revenue bond indebtedness. The Commissioner's Office provided the annual report on institutional and revenue bond indebtedness, highlighting key information related to the $1.3 billion of UC revenue bonds that were outstanding as of June 30th, 2018. The Commissioner's staffs reaffirmed that all bonds are being retired on schedule, with debt service requirements being met or exceeded in every case. And lastly, we have the tab L, the UCHI 2019 data book update. The Commissioner's Office advised the committee that the annual UCHI data book has been updated for the 2019 calendar year and has been posted to the UCHI website along with all previous versions of the data book. The Commissioner's Office has published the UCHI data book every year since 1987. The data book highlights key educational statistics regarding student enrollment, degrees and certificates awarded, financial aid and tuition rates, financial information and comparisons, annual cost reports, staffing reports, and facility inventories for the system and each UCHI institution. So a lot of valuable information in this data book. So Mr. Chairman, that concludes our report.
Thank you very much. Are there any comments, questions? Regent Anderson. All right, thank you. We are going to move into executive session. I believe Regent Larson has a motion to facilitate that.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board meet in executive session for the sole purpose of discussing the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of individuals.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second. Mr. Barnes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We will reconvene upstairs and where we started this morning.